Welcome into Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. I'm Dr. Tim Clinton.
And I'm Dr. Zach Clinton, and together we're your hosts. Thank you for joining us.
If you enjoyed today's program and you feel called to help us equip the church to provide mental health care and to help those in need, visit our foundation at aaccfoundation.org. That's aaccfoundation.org. Hey, there you're going to find a little bit more about the impact we're having in local communities to strengthen families and individuals. We're on a mission to help equip people everywhere to improve their relationship with God and the ones they love.
We'd love for you to be a part of our family. Let's bring a message of hope and encouragement to today's generations. Your gift ensures that this program and your station remain on the air.
Hey, on today's program, my son, Dr. Zach Clinton, he's joined by a great guest. Let's get started.
As always, I'll be your host today, Dr. Zach Clinton, on Life, Love, Faith, and Family. And we're back for day two with a dear friend, a brother in the faith, somebody that many of you know is a Super Bowl champion, a high-performing individual, but really a man after God's own heart, Steve Weatherford. Today, we're going to talk a lot more about mentorship and the power of people that God surrounds ourselves with. Really, at the end of the day, it's the family of choice, as Steve has mentioned in the past. And so, Steve, thank you for joining me back again for day two.
Yeah, it's like being in the NFL two-a-days. It's so nice, we're going to do it twice. Let's go.
Let's roll. Steve, talk about the general's tent here for a moment. What a great idea to have these regular family meetings. Unpack that a bit more for us. How do you involve all the kids in these meeting times?
The first 5 minutes of the meeting is we just kind of pass the mic around. We all sit on the couch, and I ask each member of the family, like, how much joy and how much love did you experience in this last week? Rank it from 1 to 10. Like, what's your joy meter and what's your love tank? And we make it fun for the kids, and, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10. You know, if we hear somebody in the family say 5, we'll circle back to them like, hey, like, why is your love tank at a 5 this week? Or why is your joy meter at a 5? And it gives them an opportunity to begin to talk about their feelings and let us know where they're at. So collectively as a family, every single week, we know where they're at. And we're able to adjust and make sure that, because like you said, we're never going to be able to have things even or balanced. That's such a, like, it's a sweet word to say, but, you know, as a father and as a husband, as an entrepreneur, as an evangelist, like, things are never going to be even, but we can put things in place. Like, I know that every single one of my daughters is going to get individually 12 dates this year at minimum.
That's right.
So that can be even, but the amount of time that they're getting week to week is not going to be the same. But if once per week they're letting us know where they're at, where their vitals are, think about, you go to an emergency room. You go to an emergency room with a broken arm, they're not actually going to treat your broken arm first. They're going to have you get on the weight scale. They're going to take your temperature. They're going to see how high, how tall you are. They're going to check your vitals, and then they're going to attend to the thing that's wrong. Mm. And in the general's tent, that's the first thing that I do with every member of our family is to get their vitals. And the next thing that we do is we talk about virtues, a.k.a. what does it mean to be a Weatherford? Mm. And every single one of my children, with the exception of my 4-year-old, could tell you our family mission statement, but then give you a breakdown of what every word actually means. We are the Weatherfords. We're a fearless and disciplined family that honors and grows always, in always, with a joyful spirit of excellence. So the next thing that we do is we ask them, like, hey, what core value did you do really well this week?
Yeah.
And where'd you suck? Right? And I'm teaching my kids, just like I was taught as an athlete, watch the game film.
That's right.
Like, what did you do well in this last week? Let's celebrate it. You were disciplined this last week. Awesome job, Ace. Oh, you really struggled with honor? Okay, well, how can you be better in the next week moving forward? Because when I was with the New York Giants or Jets or the Jacksonville Jaguars or the Kansas City Chiefs or the New Orleans Saints, we didn't just go to practice and then go home.
Right.
We actually spent a whole lot more time in the film room watching the game, watching the practice, learning, adjusting, doubling down on our strengths than we did actually out on the field.
Man, Steve, that's amazing.
But if you do a good job reviewing the game film, you don't have to spend as much time in the weight room because you're working smarter, not harder. So the second part of it would be virtues. And then the last part of our meeting would be going over vision. Like, and I think most men don't cast vision for their family, for their wife, for their children. And we have a lot of kids that grow up with anxiety because they don't know who they are, and they don't know what's my life going to be like. They have this overwhelm because they're constantly comparing themselves to other people. So we have an opportunity to recast the vision of like where we're going as a family. And it, you know, just like for the different things that you're doing, a month from now, when you find out that your wife is pregnant, it's going to change things. It's going to change the vision. You're like, okay, well, we've got to get this thing in place and that thing in place. And so for my family, I'm constantly casting vision, but I'm also the vision for this next week. Yes. Hey, like dad's, I'm flying to Kansas City. I'm going to go speak at this group called LeaderCast. There's going to be this guy there and that guy there. And this is what I'm believing for. And then I'm going to come home on Friday and I'm going to sit down with my friend Zach. We're going to magnify the name of Jesus. And then Saturday, I'm flying to Illinois. I'm going to go preach at my college roommate's church. And I haven't seen him in 20 years. And this is just an example of we had this meeting on Wednesday. Yeah. And normally we would have it on a Sunday. But because of travel that I'll be gone this next Sunday, I make sure that every single week that we have a general's tent, that I date my wife, that I date my daughter, and circling it back to the question of balance, the reason that I've done these things is because I sat down with a mentor and we said, what can we do to silence the voice of the enemy? So no longer when I'm traveling and sitting somewhere like this with you and the enemy's like, totally missing it with your wife. You're putting in more time traveling and talking about Jesus than you are with your own family. And that's fine. There may be more time that I'm ministering and I'm evangelizing, but I know that I have 2.5 hours every single 168 hours. That's what a week is. 2.5 hours that is 100% dedicated to, what do you need, babe?
Amazing.
What's in your world? What are your worries? What are your fears? And how can I stand in the gap for you? And so that's one way that my life is not balanced, but I keep it healthy because I have mastery of my 168. And that's really what it comes down to. Yeah. If we can master our 168 hours each week and continue to watch the game film and improve on that as a family, as a leader, and as a marriage, the enemy really doesn't have a shot. No. But if we don't stay vigilant to every 7 days to do that, all it takes is 2 or 3 weeks for me to miss that meeting.
Yes.
And I notice that, like, my family's beginning to fall apart. That's because right. Cracks get made. Because I'm the one that's re-reminding my family, hey, how did this last week go? And checking in on them. So I think if anybody's listening to this, I would implore you. Those are very easy, very, like, practical, tactical. It's not like woo-woo, philosophical, me say, well, listen to the Lord. No, but I'm telling you, practical and tactical, these are things that you can do to ensure that you never lose your marriage, that you never lose intimacy with your kids, and you can continue to pursue things the way that God is calling you to pursue them. Because God is never going to call us away from our wife and away from our family in a way that's going to damage them. But if we lead ourselves well, we don't have to live in either or. And most men think, I need to live in either or. Mm-hmm. Oh, my wife, my kids are this age. And like, well, you know, it's just not a good time for... No, you're just not mastering your 168. You're not getting the most out of what God gave you. You're limiting yourself by thinking it's an either or. It's not an either or. It's a both and.
It's a both and. Steve, those are such practical, tactical ways that we can continue to live the urgent life at home camp, like you said, but also afar and going out and making sure that we're testifying of the good news of the gospel. I love the word that you kept painting, the picture of these are pictures of possibility or pictures of potential that you would even see and that you would begin to think about as a kid, because now as a man, you're starting to recognize the importance of vision. Yeah. Resilience, I think, is often kind of breathe through two different aspects. Reflection, which you talked a lot about, being able to go back, watch the game film, being able to reflect. We understand the importance of sports. You have to be able to watch film. You have to be able to go back and say, I either win or I learn. I never lose. Yeah. I'm going to make the adjustments, not excuses. I'm going to reflect, but then also repetition. It's what I do repeatedly, not occasionally, that ultimately will determine who I become. My dad was sitting down with 7-time NASCAR Cup Series champ Jimmy Johnson years ago, and my dad and Jimmy did a lot of life together. And my dad kind of reiterated this one point that Jimmy would always make, and he would say, Tim, limits begin where vision ends.
Yeah.
And it's this idea that, man, your mission is not separate from your vision. You have to be able to see it. I'm reading a book right now called You Are What You Love. And so often in our lives, even in the world of counseling and mental health, right, we live in a world today that is the most destigmatized mental health generation that's ever walked the face of the earth. Yeah. Everybody is feeling something. And oftentimes we kind of, I'll say this, we put all of our weight on our feelings. So because I feel this way, I identify as this thing or this person. And sometimes that can be more dangerous or more harmful than it is helpful. But what this book gets at is we're not just thinking things. We can't just tell ourselves to think differently and then all of a sudden our actions sometimes follow. We are what we love. So the question that is posed all throughout this book is, what do you want? What do you really desire for your life and for the lives of those that you love? And it's built around two things, imitation and initiation, right? Who will I surround myself with that I can imitate because they're imitating that of Christ? And then how can I initiate these habits every day in my life consistently to become the man that God has called me to become? Steve, you haven't always been like this, though. And I know you're no stranger to suffering. You already alluded to some of that when you were just sharing briefly about your testimony. And I've watched several interviews of yours in the past because there might be somebody out there today like, Steve, I don't get it, man. Like 8 years ago before this radical transformation, you won a Super Bowl. You're the league's fittest man. Like you had all of these things going for you. That sounds like a great life. Like what are you talking about? That wasn't what it was cut out to be. You talk about how on the night you guys won the Super Bowl, it was arguably the lowest, darkest, most depressing night of your life. Take us back to that moment and help us really understand that there is nothing in this temporal earth that can satisfy that God-shaped void within our hearts.
Yeah, the night Dr. Zach's talking about was February 5th, 2012. It's crazy to say it's been 14 years ago.
Wow.
But even decades before that, when I think about going into kindergarten and I have two brothers and I have a sister, I thought to myself, well, I'm not like my brother and my sister, but maybe when I go to kindergarten, I'll find some other people that are like me that I can relate to. And I remember getting sent to the principal's office the first 5 days in a row. And it was in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where they didn't have to call your parents and they could just paddle you. And I remember very early on, 5 or 6 years old, realizing just how different I am than everyone else. And because I was different, I was punished for that. That was my perception in my mind. And I have what the world likes to call, and I reject this label, ADHD, you know. I believe I just have a very creative and active mind. I don't have an attention problem. I have an interest problem. If I'm not interested, I can't pay attention. And I remember like 8 years old was the first time I ever really felt celebrated by anyone. And it was when I got into sports and I was playing soccer. And I remember walking off the soccer field and other parents coming up to me, telling me how great I am. And I had never really received words of affirmation before. And I have a wonderful dad, very, very present, but he grew up with an old school dad that never used words to tell him who he was. And so I'm 8, 9, 10 years old and I don't know who I am. I don't fit in my family. It's very obvious. I don't even fit in school. I go to Sunday school and I don't fit in there. Like I got kicked out of Sunday school. That's supposed to be the place everybody's welcome, right? And I remember sitting outside the door and they're doing like Bible trivia and I'm screaming out the answer, Philippians 4:13 from the hallway. And the teacher, which most of the time was my mom, was like, I'm sorry, Stephen, you're not eligible to win the Tootsie Roll because you're outside in the hallway. And I just remember some of my earliest memories of myself is I hated myself. But when I was 8 or 9 years old, I remember walking off of the soccer field after we beat a team like 5-0. And the other parents were coming up to me like, man, Steve, you weren't on our team last year. And we got destroyed by this team. And because of you, we destroyed them. And my son scored his first goal today. I'm going to go take him for pizza. And it's because you passed him the ball. You're great. And I remember getting in the car with my dad. I'm like, Dad, like, am I the things that they said that I am? And I remember my dad just saying, you need to focus on what you can control. He didn't affirm it, but he didn't deny it. And then I remember the next real defining moment that I had that changed everything for me was I got invited to a different church. And I grew up in a very strict Southern Baptist church in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and didn't want to have anything to do with it. And I got invited to co-meet Baptist Church. And I was 11 years old, and I remember walking into that church, and they had a Power Team concert. You're probably a little young to remember the Power Team, but the Power Team was a pretty much, it was like a collection of like WWF wrestlers that love Jesus. Yeah. And they would go from city to city and do school assemblies. They would visit churches, and they would do all these incredible feats of strength, like rip phone books in half and break Major League Baseball bats over their knee and take 3-inch bars of iron bars and bend them over their head and break bricks. And I'm like, I remember walking in to this church and seeing like fire and all this stuff on the stage and these guys in cutoff t-shirts. I remember looking back at my dad. I'm like, is this allowed in a church? And my dad was like smugly. He was like, I guess here it is. And I'm like, well, can I go up to the front? And I grew up in the 90s, man. I loved Hulk Hogan, Macho Man, Randy Savage. And I remember watching those guys on TV and my dad discouraging me from wanting to be like them, because he's like, man, all they do is care about themselves and this and that. And he wasn't wrong, but he'd like flip the TV off and he'd walk away and I'd flip it back on. I'm like, yeah, but they're so cool. And then I see these guys that are talking about the same Jesus as the people at my church, but they were doing it with a tank top on, with a mullet on the back of their heads, and they're doing unbelievable things. And I remember when the main guy walked out, his name was Keith Kraft, and he shared his 15-minute testimony of how he died when he was 4 years old, and the prayers of his grandmother brought him back to life. And then he put up on the screen a picture of the Dallas Morning News, how that story was real, and it was in the paper. And I was like, God, maybe God is real. And as he began to talk about Jesus, he started weeping. And I'm like, wow, I've never seen a guy this big, this strong, this assertive, this confident, but then also this gentle and this kind and this like compassionate. I'm like, that's what I want to be like.
Man, that's amazing, Steve.
And I remember he had a cop come up and put on a pair of handcuffs. And he said, these chains represent the bondage that the enemy has on you. And then he had another cop come up and put two pairs of handcuffs on him. And I'm like, my little chin's on the stage at 11 years old. And he counts down from 10 to 1, and then he breaks the chains and he said, if you feel like you don't fit in, if you feel like you've made some mistakes and you feel like you're separated from God, I want you to know that there's only one way for you to have a relationship with Jesus. And it's through Jesus Christ. And if you want to give your life to Jesus tonight, I'm going to count to three and I want you to raise your hand. I didn't just raise one hand. I shot both of my hands up. I'm like, I want what that guy has. That was the first picture of possibility that I saw. And I'm like, I want to be just like that guy. And so after that night, I ended up going home and telling my mom, I'm different. I felt different. Yeah. She didn't have to tell me to read my Bible or say my prayers. I wanted to be just like Jesus, and that guy told me that's the way to do it. I remember back in the day, like Sundays would be the day that they would put a bunch of coupons in the Sunday paper. Mm-hmm. So the Sunday paper was a lot thicker. And I would take that newspaper and I'd rip it in half in Jesus' name. I would take my mom's iron hanger and I'm bending them in the mirror, you know, imitating the guy that I saw that changed my life. And I had like 6 months where I just remember it's just like, I don't fit into my family, but like Jesus made me differently and he did it on purpose. And he also shared a Bible verse that night, Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. And I hung my hat on that. I'm like, I'm not like my family, but God's got a great plan for my life. Mm. And 6 months after that event, I went to a new school. It was called Family Christian Academy, and I had a teacher that I believe like recognized the gap that I had of like words of affirmation and physical touch. And so almost every day I walked into this teacher's room, he had something encouraging to say to me, a pat on the back, a hug, these different things. And I didn't realize it at the time. He wasn't doing that to build me up and to encourage me. He was actually grooming me, because after school one day, he asked me to stay in his office, and he did awful things to me, like things that you should never do to a little boy. He stole my innocence. I felt so broken, so dirty, so perverted, so unlovable. And I never told anybody what happened because I was scared to death. I already didn't know where I sat with my dad. I knew he was always there, but I genuinely didn't know if he liked me or loved me because he's so quiet. His dad was like Clint Eastwood. So if you compare my grandfather to my dad was very, very loving, but my grandfather was extraordinarily cold. And so I was scared that if I told my dad what happened, he's going to say, well, you're gay now, and I don't want you anymore. So I didn't say anything. But shortly thereafter, about 6 months after that, I was introduced to pornography. My friend gave me a VHS tape, and I knew I wasn't supposed to watch it, but I did. And it was interesting. It was exciting, and I liked it. And then I discovered if you put pornography together with masturbation, all these fireworks go off in your brain, and it's almost like doing a drug. And so that became like my hidden little coping mechanism. Anytime I felt rejected, abandoned, unlovable, depressed, anxious, I could go and I can do that little activity, and I would forget about all of that stuff. And so this quiet addiction happened for me. And I remember going into high school at 108 pounds, 5'8", so not necessarily short, but very, very skinny. And I told myself, if I'm gonna be worth anything, I've gotta get bigger. I've gotta get stronger, and I gotta be a winner. And so I played four sports in high school, worked incredibly hard, and went from 108 pounds as a freshman and graduated at 225 and never touched steroids. Wow. So I literally doubled in size. I gained 117 pounds in 4.5 years, ended up getting a bunch of scholarships and awards and these different things. And I remember calling my dad when I got a scholarship. I'm like, Dad, you're never going to believe it. I'm the first one in the family to get a full ride scholarship to the University of Illinois. And I'm thinking like the heavens are going to open up and my dad's going to be like, oh my gosh, I'm so proud of you. I never would have thought you've worked so hard and sacrificed. And the first thing he said to me was, well, if you get caught doing these things that you know you're doing, they're going to take that scholarship away. And so I just remember like, you know, like a knife in my heart, because my dad was right.
Yeah.
But my dad had the habit of every time something great happened, he felt like in his spirit, he needed to help me recognize the areas of my life that still needed improvement instead of celebrating what I had done well. So it actually turned my mind to being very critical of myself.
Of course.
And as an athlete, if you're critical of yourself, you're probably not going to have as many weaknesses because you're going to spend a lot of time trying to fix them. And so my mind had a negative bias, meaning I would pay attention and I would ruminate and I would focus on what's not right and never celebrate what happened or what was good. So I go to college and it wasn't enough to be an all Big Ten or all American in football. I needed to run track too. So I ended up being a decathlete, becoming successful and setting records in that. And I remember the next like big defining moment that I had was after college was over and I had achieved all these different things. I went to the New Orleans Saints as an undrafted free agent and competed against a guy that was a 10-year NFL veteran. He was a Pro Bowler, and there was really very small chance that I was going to make the team. But he ended up getting injured. I performed really well. And the next thing you know, the coach calls me into his office and says, congratulations, you're going to be our punter for the 2006 season. And I remember going outside of that meeting, calling my dad. I'm like, Dad, you're never going to believe this. They're sewing our last name on the back of the New Orleans Saints jersey. I'm number 7, Dad. Can you believe it? I'm a pro. Dad, you're never going to believe this. They just gave me my locker. To my left is number 9. Maybe you've heard of him. Drew Brees. To my right, Dad, number 5, you want to know who that is? Reggie Bush. Dad, I'm a pro. And the first thing he said to me was, Steve, that's really great, but I want you to know your contract's different than Drew's and different than Reggie's. If you have a bad game this weekend, when you come to work on Monday, those guys are still going to have that locker. You probably won't. And he was just... And I have these conversations with him now because we're very, very close. He travels all over the country with me in the different events that we're doing. But because he grew up with a father that had negative bias and a very critical person. That's all that he knew.
And Steve, just to clarify for our listeners and our audience, negativity bias is this idea where we hyperfixate on all that is wrong and we begin to lose sight of all that is right. And so again, it goes into, you've mentioned a word in this conversation, rumination, the pathological obsession with our pain, where we get so fixated and so blinded, again, on the negativity that we begin to have a bias where that's the only thing that we begin to look for and define ourselves with. Steve, hey man, I know we're fighting the clock here just for a moment, but I just want to continue this conversation so much further, just hearing your testimony, wanting to pick it apart a little bit further and talk about people fuel and talk about all the things that God is continuing to do and even just a mission for men. I'd love it if it's okay with you for you to stay right there.
Absolutely, I'm in.
Look forward to it, my friend.
Thanks for listening to Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you enjoyed today's broadcast and want to help equip the church to provide Christian mental health care, visit aaccfoundation.org. Your donation ensures this program and your station stay on the air. On behalf of our co-hosts, Dr. Tim Clinton and his son, Zach, this is Jim Kress. We look forward to having you with us again next time. May God bless you.